This entire season of Retronauts is fully funded by listeners like you thanks to Patreon. If you'd like to find out how you can help and get episodes a week in advance, head on over to patreon.com/retronauts. Thanks and enjoy the show. This week on Retronauts.
Letters, we get letters. We get stacks and stacks of letters.
Everybody, it's me, Bob Mackey, for Retronauts episode. You figure it out. I don't know yet. And today's topic is listener mail, not viewer mail. I keep writing that. But you guys, I hope you're not watching this podcast. That'd be weird. So who do we have?
Put on my clothes.
Who do we have in the room today? Let's go around the table, starting right here.
Hi, I'm the artist formerly known as Jeremy Parrish.
And who is sitting right next to Jeremy?
Chris, the male booty Antista.
Were you given that title, Chris, or are you allowed to call yourself that? I don't know.
I opened up an old 80s wrestling book, and there was someone, a wrestler called the Male Booty, and I looked into it, and he's dead. It's mine.
Okay. I think you have to kill him and eat his brain to gain his powers, though. That's how it works in wrestling.
I don't know. A squatter's rights. You can squat on the Male Booty and claim
I'll
it as your own.
Your skull, literally.
Or kill his pet snake. That's all I know. And who else is here?
And Ray Barnhold.
Yay, it's Ray Barnhold making another appearance. I love when Ray comes back. Thanks for coming back, Ray.
Yeah, no problem.
So today's topic, like I said, is listener mail, and you're wondering –
terrible game.
Oh, I hate it. All that sorting, all that – and then you eventually go nuts because you work at the post office.
There are no right answers to the dialogue prompts.
That's true. Talk about retro. Who remembers post office massacres? Wow. Stay tuned for that episode. Anyhow, I do want to talk about why I'm doing this. It's not just because I'm lazy, although that's part of it. You guys rarely get a chance to reach out to us because we record shows erratically like every 3 months in short bursts. So it's hard to keep up with you guys. So I like to check in like once a year to see how you're doing and, you know, to field questions because, you know, we can't
like
always respond to every comment. How you doing, kids?
Bob pulls up in a convertible.
It's time to go. So
before, a new wife.
Jeez. Before I get started, though, I do want to talk about retro releases. We did this last year. Again, we record the show erratically, so we don't always get a chance to, you know, check in on what's coming out. And thankfully for us, there's not a lot to cover. So once a year is pretty much good for covering retro releases. So let's go into that right now. So retro releases, I think I want to let Jeremy talk about the first one on my list because it's the closest one that just came out, and hopefully this episode will come out soon, but it's The Misadventures of Tron Bonne, and that just hit PSN for the princely sum of $5.99.
I don't
know. Compared to the retail sum of what, like $300 before, previously?
Yeah. So we will already have talked about this on our Mega Man episode that has already aired as of this airing but
has
not yet been recorded. We're out of time.
This is after the Mega Man game announced.
I've gone all Kurt Vonnegut on everyone.
Whoa, yes. Whoa, even Chris knows.
On second time?
I see.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, Misadventures of Tron Bonne is awesome. You should go listen to our Mega Man episode, and we'll tell you all about it.
Oh, we're going to talk about it then? Okay, cool.
We will have talked about it.
I got to say, I love it.
Will and On have talked about it.
Okay.
And I streamed it with Laser Time. Terrible plug, but I wanted to get it in there.
Check out that YouTube, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. And I love that game, but the box pushing segments can always go to hell in any game.
The box pushing segments, actually, they're box carrying segments.
Oh, I'm sorry. That makes it better.
They're simple. You don't even have to really...
Like Shenmue.
Spend much time with them. Like, getting through them is easy.
I guess you can just skip that part of the game.
You can't really skip it. You do have to, like, earn up enough money.
Okay.
You
know? I don't remember playing
that
much
of it.
But
they're quick and painless if you just go for the goal. If you really want to perfect it and get, you know, everything, that can be challenging. But I'm not, you know, a big Sokoban fan, but I like the little box-carrying segments. Maybe because you can put down a box and accidentally squish a serve bot and it's like, rah!
That's one of the good parts of it. I can't do box pushing or carrying or whatever the hell. the Sokoban of our of this generation.
You just
generation.
Think you're too good for blue-collar work. But those of us hey, who grew up in the hard times know.
I went to 8 years of college to turn this collar white, and that's what I stand by.
So I guess could have just used new Tide with bleach.
I think we forgot
man,
how
that could have saved so much money.
How cute the art design is in Tronbon. I was just thinking ugly textures, and then I, you know, firing it up recently. This is really cute. Like the cops that run around, I think that's all really adorable and kind of stuff I don't see in modern games.
It has the most charming alien homage ever.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah.
pretty – I mean it's a very, very late PlayStation 1 game, but I think it looks great. They really had that system figured out. Didn't it?
Yeah, even though it has a – clearly had a much lower budget than the regular Mega Man
games. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They did a good job of making cuts in the right places.
And I think this game came out in, what, May of 2000?
No, yes.
Something like that. I think I got this the game the same day I started my first job at Taco Bell, which lasted 3 weeks. So I associate this game with smelling like a taco.
That was during the Chalupa launch, right? Exciting times.
It was when Chalupa Mania was taking off. Yeah.
Chalupa Adventures at Trombone.
I don't know if they still have Chalupas. Yeah.
They do.
Okay. Of course
they
do.
Sorry, I have to know.
It's probably just called something else now.
It's just caked in Dorito dust.
Yeah. So up next on our list, we have Mario Kart DS. And I've been playing a lot of this on the Wii U. It doesn't look great, obviously. Yeah.
Did you before?
I did before, but
weird.
One thing I like about this game is that I think it's the most skill-based Mario Kart ever. You have to work for every power slide.
It has the best handling, the best physics, the best, I feel like, track modeling, like everything came together. It's really a shame that it is so low resolution because if you play it on the gamepad, it looks fine. But man, on a big TV, I'm like, what are these abstract? Yeah. It's like you've suddenly gone pointillist. It's, you know, Sunday afternoon racing carts on the island of Grand Jatte.
I don't know any of those words.
It was an art reference.
Okay. It looks a little better than I thought it would, like, because I guess they bumped the resolution, but you know they don't bump the textures.
So
I'm not seeing huge squares on my TV though. I'm seeing like the polygonal figures are like clean, like cleanly like defined. Maybe you just have pixelated like corneas.
Yeah, it could be.
It could be.
You're such a retro gamer.
Yeah,
I'm like one of the all bed.
I'm so retro. I destroyed my eyesight. Yeah. Any other thoughts on this game?
Wait, you said the DS?
The DS one came out. Yeah,
on Wii U.
On Wii U. Yeah,
for virtual
console.
When
did they start doing that?
Recently.
Yeah, like
they promised like a year ago they were going to put DS games, and they finally started.
Yeah, I never noticed.
See, it's not like they bother telling anyone. You just check into the Wii U shop and be like, I guess I can buy this now. Okay,
that's so
cool.
Weird that they think that has to be a selling point for the Wii U. We got old portable games here.
Yeah, that's why they put them out.
It's the wrong system.
It is.
But Bobby, you forgot to mention the most important factor to this reissue.
Are you talking about go ahead.
Yeah, like the big selling point of Mario Kart DS. Yes, it was the best Mario Kart to date at the time, but a big part of its appeal was that it had online multiplayer action. Yes, and snaking. Okay, so like in this period between the launch of the game and the discovery of snaking, it was amazing. There was like a year in there where it was really awesome.
Oh, there was
awesome
a year? Oh my God, I thought
maybe
it was a lot
months,
sooner.
I don't know.
Well, it was short of it's the thing I judge Nintendo very harshly because they never fix their online. And I got the game late. And by the time I did, it's like, it's already ruined. And I go in and just like, this is not playable anymore online. This will never be addressed, updated.
At inception, however, or conception or whatever, it was really good. And a big part of the appeal of the game is racing other people. Yeah. But you can't do that in any way on Wii U. Not only can you not go online, you also can't do local multiplayer for what I think are obvious reasons. You're not going to like get a daisy chain of Wii U's in the room.
I would like to see that though.
That's why they took the head-to-head feature out of future Bushido Blade games because like no one links their consoles together. That's just nonsense. Even for Halo, I'm sorry, EGM, that's all a lie. No one does that. So
they took out the functionality.
So having the lack of online functionality or any multiplayer functionality whatsoever for Mario Kart DS is a big blow. I mean, it's still a really well-made Mario Kart game, but if you're going to play a Mario Kart game on Wii U, why would you pick that one? There are others to choose from.
That's the thing. It's an advertisement for Mario Kart 8.
Is it?
If you love Mario Kart 8 so much.
I paid $10 on this game, and it kind of isn't very good, so maybe I should spend $60 on the other one.
That's exactly what Nintendo wants you to do. That's the whole thing with the virtual console now.
I guess Nintendo won me over on this because I had low expectations, and I was like, of course the multiplayer is not going to work. And that's not a good excuse, but I just expected this to not happen because other re-releases have not had multiplayer, online multiplayer.
If Virtual Console now is just an advertisement for current games, why do we keep getting so many Mega Man games?
I'm only talking about Nintendo's case.
Mysteries.
Like, they first showed that DS capability with Brain Age, so I'm wondering, you know, are we going to see Brain Age on Wii U next? Maybe.
I don't think we're going to see anything on Wii U.
So by that logic, is Konami promoting the Igavania game because they're releasing all their Castlevanias?
No, I just said Nintendo. Nintendo's case.
Just Nintendo, got it. Sorry.
Because they only put out, like, things that sold well before to begin with, like New Super Mario Brothers and Mario Kart and, like, Yoshi's Touch and Go, which was a launch DS game. And, of course, everybody would buy that.
We will never see Yoshi's Island for mysterious reasons that will never be revealed to us. So moving down the list, we have – and this is just something I'm throwing a bone to the fans out there because I personally don't like this game, but I feel like it's the best in the series. And by the way, these are all releases of 2015. I didn't go back to 2014. This is just what's happened between then and the end of May. So
you're going to talk about the original Dark Souls, Kingfield, right?
That wasn't in 2015, but I have something similar to it. But the next game is Donkey Kong Country 2, Diddy Kong's Quest. I got to say, these are not – games that are fun
to
me.
Favorite series, yeah, I know.
But Chris loves Diddy Kong, so maybe he can talk about it. This is his quest. This is his titular game before he was abandoned for a giant dumb baby in the next game. So maybe you can talk about it, Chris.
Diddy's the only amiibo I own. Because I rated him as Smash Brothers.
And don't you fight as like a Pink Diddy?
Pink Diddy. Okay. I'm a Pink Diddy always. Love the color pink. Glad we can re-embrace it.
Is it short? Like, do you shorten it to P. Diddy?
Pete. Never Pink thought of Diddy. That, but I feel like I'm infringing on something.
Yeah, you got to watch it.
I for some reason, I love this game, and I got a girlfriend briefly at the time the game.
What was that like?
This game was out. I can't remember because I was on the lava level, and she kept calling me, so I broke up with her in the middle of – because it was a rental. I had to get through it. And
See, sometimes women just don't understand, Chris.
If you want to know my commitment to Diddy Kong's Quest, that is it. And sorry,
you
Meg.
Sacrificed personal relationships to help Diddy on his quest for what? Bananas, I guess?
And
I
wish it wasn't such a hacky joke. I saw her recently on Facebook, and she looks very happy with her girlfriend.
Aw. So maybe Diddy Quest helped her find her true identity.
Oh, men? Really?
Or maybe you turned her off of men forever.
That's entirely possible.
He could have conquested me, but instead he... Never mind.
Yeah, Bob, the title is Diddy's Kong Quest.
Diddy's Kong Quest?
Yes.
Oh, the pun. The pun. It was so bad it escaped me. Diddy's Kong Quest. Yeah. Got it.
Thank you,
Rare. Oh, my God. Yeah. 20 years and I finally get it.
See, I knew you'd come around to the DKC.
That seems to be happening more and more. Like, I see people, you know, our age and lower just figuring that out. It's like, oh, it's Kong. Mind blown.
I had it as Diddy's.
What do you mean the cloud or the thing with the booth?
During my brief,
we're blowing too many minds right
at
now.
At a publisher, it's like, just drop the subtitle. No one's ever going to call it that. Yeah. We will only call it that once. Now, two, three. But it was two. It was very easy to say DKC 2.
Our game is made by Cheeky Brits.
It's kind of like Disney's Epic War Inspectors, Disney's Epic Mickey 2, The Power of Two Game of the Year Edition Gold Plus Platinum.
War Inspectors, Disney's Epic Mickey. I wrote more about that game than anybody on the planet.
Wow, okay.
And Disney was like, no, it's Disney's Epic Mickey. And like, yeah, everybody knows that. And like, no, that's a title. Like, no, it's not. That's not the way anybody will Google it, and that's not the way our readers will read it. It's Epic Mickey.
But the brand, Chris, the brand.
No, I'm sorry. I'm not putting the trademark symbol over any time I write about the title.
It's been a while since PR has contacted me to say, no, if you look, the title should always be in all caps.
Yeah. Yes.
They've gotten past that.
And then, oh, man, a couple pub – only that – it was THQ. I can say that. They are the only people who email us like, could you mention that we're the publisher more?
It really mean a lot to
us. I haven't read about games in a long time, so I feel weird being able to reminisce about this.
One thing about Diddy Kong is, I think it was the late 90s, maybe early 2000s, Puff Daddy changed his name to P. Diddy, and I was like, you can't do that. Like, this is an established character. Was he not aware of this? Like, I didn't see him wearing a Nintendo baseball cap at any time.
Diddy Kong is Diddy K, not P. Diddy.
But Diddy has a defined meaning for most people in this universe, and it is a tiny monkey. So
you have to be a Puff Lion.
Yeah,
that's your only option.
But what if Snoop Dogg named himself like P Kong or something, or like S Kong? It's like, wait, no, there's another Kong. There's several Kongs. Come on, let's get better.
Now, anyway.
That's a brand problem, people. That is a brand problem.
You don't like this series, baby?
It's okay.
But this came out like what, less than a year after?
I think it was like 95.
It was a year after. They annualized it for a while. But you forgot to mention that when that game came out on Virtual Console, all the Donkey Kong Country games came out on Virtual Console. Mm-hmm. Not just the Super NES ones, but also the Game Boy ones.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm talking
about... You could buy and compare and say, like, oh,
Those are neat. Those are neat conversions.
Really feel sad for handheld gamers of the 90s, I think.
Yeah, it's like playing
That is abstract. Like Mario Kart DS on a on a 46-inch screen. Yes, that's abstract, but man, those debabelized graphics reduced to four colors on a 160 by 144 green screen. What are you even looking at?
VG Empire might have done a whole show. Oh yeah, what's the best thing about Donkey Kong Country, those old ones? The music. The music still holds up, is pretty great. The music conversion for the Game Boy ones is also amazing.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
I'm surprised. That system does not have a lot of great music.
That's not a fault of the system. The system actually has a really good... It has a good music chip, yeah. Like, when you have a Game Boy game in the hands of capable composers and programmers.
I had a friend who's in a band that was...
Like, when I do my Game World videos, I tend to just, like, let the episodes begin with the title screen, because some of the title screen music in those games is just like, I just want to listen to this for 10 minutes.
I'm probably not giving them a fair shake.
You're not.
But I did love hearing, was it Donkey Kong Land? Am I crazy? Yeah. The music is amazing conversions of who was it, David Wise music from SNES ones.
SNES. I've never heard that before.
SNES.
I do wish that we could have gotten the DK rap in Game Boy Fidelity.
Well, you can have that on the DK64, which is also available, right? I don't know if that
it
was
is,
this year.
Yes, that was actually released before. No, maybe it was after. It was like the first N64 game they released on Wii U, though.
Wow. what an honor.
For some reason. So before Mario Kart, for Super Mario 64.
So if you got to play Donkey Kong Country game, play this one. And I'm sorry if I'm offending people. I don't personally care for this series, but this seems like the most...
Tropical Freeze.
You're not? I like that game a lot. I'm talking about the old Donkey Kong games. Yeah. Tropical Freeze is great. You can play that too, but it's also $60, not $8.
Or it's free with Club Nintendo. I don't know.
Or it's Club Nintendo. What is that? What are you talking about?
Yeah, it's over. It's long over, isn't it?
Mm.
We'll be by this is on the air.
Yeah. So hope you got your points out of that. So next game, one of Jeremy's favorites, I think, is Klonoa 2 Dream Champ Tournament, which I think came out for Game Boy Advance in like 2006, right? Something crazy like that.
Yeah, it was end of life. I mean, it actually came out in Japan in like 2003, and then for whatever reason, at the very ass end of the Game Boy Advance's life, Namco was like, let's release some of these old games. They also did a Mr. Driller game.
Yeah, Mr. Driller 2, which was a Japanese launch game for GBA.
Yeah. So it was like 5 years later.
Pump it out in 2005.
Yeah.
That's a Stewie Griffin game.
So what makes this Klonoa good, Jeremy? I think you like it a little more than me.
Well, all Klonoas are good, so I'm not – I don't understand.
What about Klonoa Heroes? What about Klonoa Beach Volleyball? You play Klonoa Heroes?
Yeah.
Huh, weird.
Well, there you go.
I played the ROM and I didn't
like it. Bob, I've played all the Klonoa games.
Okay, I believe
there's only
you.
Like six.
Even the WonderSwan.
That was twice as many as I was expecting.
Well, the WonderSwan game is actually where the Game Boy Advance games
That's what I thought,
inspired.
Yeah. So was this originally a WonderSwan game?
No, okay. They're all different, but they're all based around the same principle, which is, hey, you can't do that spinny cinematic 2.5 polygon thing on a handheld system without polygons. So why don't we take these games and really focus on the puzzle platforming element, which is something that really only showed up in like the very last levels of the PlayStation original. So they really focus on that, and each of the handheld games kind of builds on the last. I don't think Dream Champ Tournament is as complex and difficult as some of the stages in Empire of Dreams, the first Game Boy Advance one, but some of those, like the EX bonus levels, were just like... I feel like someone there hates me. It's good. It has really nice graphics. It has these forward-scrolling stages that really kind of push the Game Boy Advance's tech to about as far level as you'd expect. Like, they look really nice, comparable to, you know, Gunstar Superheroes or something. So it's really good. Yeah, it's like $8 on Virtual Console. Yeah. I really recommend it. It's puzzle platforming and some action. The boss fights are unique because instead of just fighting bosses, it's more like a race, and you have to complete puzzle platforming challenges before the boss does. So it's different, but I really like the games, and I think that was, you know, that's pretty much the finale to the series. They did a Klonoa remake for Wii, but... That's the last original game that we'll ever see in the Klonoa series.
Yeah, I like that remake, too. I'm glad they didn't make him, like, totally bad at Cole like they wanted to originally. They tried to make him look like a Sonic the Hedgehog character, but
and then
people
everyone was like,
exploded.
No. And then no one bought it because the fans were the ones who said, don't make him cool and sellable. make him, you know, charming and cute. And then it came to market and no one wanted charming and cute.
Yeah.
But if you bought the game, you got a coupon for a Wahoo Taco. So that's great.
A Wahoo Taco?
A Wahoo's Taco, yes.
What is a Wahoo's Taco?
Wahoo is a chain of taco restaurants in like SoCal.
I've never seen this.
This is one of those weird like when PR and marketing makes a decision and they don't really think beyond their neighborhood, they're like, what would be cool for us?
I know.
Let's put a taco coupon for a sort of local regional chain for every game that's going to be shipped across the country. So, you know, you live in Connecticut. What the hell good is a Wahoo Taco coupon for you? Even here in San Francisco.
I've never seen Wahoos here.
It's like an LA thing.
Wow, free cactus cooler.
That was just the weirdest marketing choice. Like Pizza Hut and Ninja Turtles, I get it.
Yeah,
I get
Pizza Huts are everywhere.
Wahoo.
And they're making it great.
Like, okay, it's funny. Wahoo. Klonoa says Wahoo. But guys, come on. You're not thinking this through.
You get one free small child's root beer at A&W.
That was kind of the Klonoa thing in general. Like, it was so well intended.
Not for everybody. So
charming, but really it was just for a tiny audience.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why they don't make him anymore.
I'm glad that his adventures are still made available in some way. So up next we have Mega Man Battle Network 3.
Terrible.
Chris doesn't like it.
No, that's where I gave up on the series.
I don't like the Battle Network series at all.
I feel like I played up to this and this is the one I like the most, but they are basically the same game.
Yeah.
And it was kind of shocking.
I have a secret though.
Oh, what's the secret?
So is every other Mega Man game.
Uh-oh.
In fact, that's what makes it a Mega Man.
Except Misadventures of Tron Bonne. Sir.
If I had to speculate, I'd say those are discarded pieces from other Dash games.
Ooh.
If I had to guess.
Okay.
There's only two other Dash games.
I know. But if I had to guess.
No. Like the box moving, there's no place in any other Mega Man game where it seems like, oh, yeah, this is where Mega Man has to carry boxes around.
But Tron Bonne might have been in that game.
Well, I'm glad we're sticking on topic.
My bad. I honestly don't know.
One day we'll discover the truth about Tron Bonne.
I don't know.
And we'll be the ones to break it.
I don't really have too much to say about Mega Man Battle Network 3, except I really liked the first two games, and I was looking forward to the third. And the mechanics were more complex and more interesting. But my God, that was the point at which it was just like, the story is so insipid and so stupid. I'm okay playing RPGs just for the mechanics, but there's so much dialogue and so much talking and so much of this like stupid kid running around doing stupid shit.
I believe his name is Lan.
Lan. Yeah. But the problem is that
I'm sorry I recommended this game, by the way.
No, it's a good game mechanically, but again, everything in the universe happens around the internet, which includes in this game a trip to the zoo.
That's right, yeah.
Where all the animals go berserk, but it turns out all the animals are robots, and you like stop the bears from mauling people by going in and hacking the bears, which is much.
At some point,
there's like a robot vulture puts a kid on top of a light pole or something, and you have to hack.
I think I do remember that light pole
or something to get the kid down. That was the point where I was just like, you know what. I can't keep doing this.
If I were working at Capcom around that time, hack the bears would have been the marketing slogan. Launched the entire campaign.
Too bad there weren't hashtags around this time.
As the one bullet point on the back.
Hack the bears and create a new society.
Oh, man. So I don't know. I mean, Jeremy has some problems with this. I feel like you can only play one of these games. I remember I bought the first one and I liked it. Then I bought the second one and I started playing it in the car and I was like, Did they put the first game in this box? Like, because it was so, like, all the sprites were the same, like, the backgrounds were the same. It just felt like
I admit
that was a very grumpy time in my life. If I went back now, I'd probably be more chill about it.
I
could probably recognize the fact that it was, like, the culmination of those first three Mega Man Battle Network games. And starting with 4 is when they reinvented the series a bit in, like, weird and inappropriate ways. Or not inappropriate, but just unwelcome ways. And everything went to hell. So if you're going to play the Battle Network games, you might as well play 3. Just bear through it, if you'll mind, if you'll forgive the pun. The story is really dumb.
Again, don't make any hashtags
for this
game.
All your criticisms about Mega Man Battle Network, had you not said Battle Network, still applies to regular Mega Man. Reuse sprites, the backgrounds are the same.
Yeah, but you don't have to care about that because it's good.
It is. It's a solid.
The RPGs require more of a time commitment and investment.
My brief period of working at Capcom has made me traumatized over the words Mega and Man.
together in the same sentence.
Yes, totally. But then, like, everybody, we need another game. I'm like, there are 700 Mega Man games you've never played, and they're all exactly the same.
Try the high-tech expressions PC ports and get back to me. So up next, we have Paper Mario for the Wii U eShop, the first Paper Mario game. Really great. It looks kind of cruddy now, but I think it still holds up. Like, I played it recently, and I liked it a lot.
I don't think it looks that cruddy. I think that was one of the few N64 games whose visuals actually hold up pretty well because...
Yeah.
They went so stylized with it.
It looks good.
I haven't actually seen the on-console emulation. How does that look for N64?
They make it smoother and
they clean it up.
Yeah,
so have you seen it on the emulator, better. I'm guessing, right? Like, it runs 60 frames a second and kind of too gorgeous, no fog.
I don't know. Mario 64 looked a lot better when I played it on... Wii U, yeah, okay. For sure. It still looks like Mario 64, but I don't know what the frame rate's like. I don't know
if
the frame
rate's so much better. Okay. Like I went back and I've been playing some N64 games on a modded N64, so it works really clean and well on
16 expansion packs stacked on top.
Yeah, exactly. No, it looks really good on the on an HD TV, and you know it's still fun, but yeah, the frame rate is like it's like 10 frames a second for Mario 64.
You have a modded 64. You guys should do it.
It's just it's RGB mods.
You have a guide for that, like
performance.
I was thinking of like
go to eBay and buy one.
No, I have all my old consoles, but I don't know how. I just got a 4K television. And I want to up these things as much as possible.
Man, you should play Mario Kart DS on that bad boy.
I would say
play Donkey Kong Land on it. And then
I should do it, film it, and then juxtapose it with the end of 2001 A Space Odyssey. That's exactly what I'm envisioning.
That's what it feels like, I think, yeah.
You become a space baby.
Yes.
So moving on, anything else to say about Paper Mario?
We didn't even talk about
it. We just made jokes about it. Yeah, sorry.
It's an actual good one on this list.
I will say come on, Ray.
I'm just kidding.
I will say I don't know. I don't like where the Paper Mario series went after this one and the GameCube one.
F.U. Sticker Star.
Yeah, I don't like Sticker Star. It was like, hey, remember Sierra games? Well, they're back and you don't like them again still.
I feel the only person who liked that game. It's so weird.
Yeah. Well, it's how much I like the original Mario RPG and how much Paper Mario took from that and Thousand Year Door.
Mario RPG was kind of poopy, actually.
I loved
it.
I just got
good with Mario RPG Paper Mario.
It gave me the patience to learn more about RPGs because of the way you interacted during the turn-based battles. And I liked that the Mario series was kind of the only RPG series to do that for a long time.
Legend of Dragoon.
Let's not talk about that.
See, I don't know anything about that, but I
although there
that.
Are some fans out there, I assume I just made a few people angry by saying
but
that.
But Sticker Star kind of removed that. It removed I don't know. I think one of the only unique gameplay elements of the entire series.
I have bigger problems, but that will be on our Sticker Star episode when I am 50.
Great theme song.
Oh yeah, the music in that game so great. Oh, yeah. beautiful soundtrack. At least that was a good part of that game.
Fabulous. The other thing I really loved about Paper Mario was the part where. You're just going on your quest, and all of a sudden Mario gets thrown in jail and accused of murder. I was like, happened? This game turned really dark.
That's in this game. You were accused of murdering a penguin, I think.
Yeah. It's finally all those that horribleness you did in Mario 64.
I was going to say, we all threw that baby
finally
penguin.
Came back to you. I would be positive that sequence was somewhat inspired by Mario 64 and watching people drop the baby penguin off.
We'll show you. Penguin side.
Yeah, it had to be.
Or, I don't know.
It can't be a coincidence.
Yeah. So I say get it. Everybody, play Mario. Good game.
Do it.
It's good. So to round out our list, there's not a lot, so I just threw on two weird From Software games that I don't know if Ray played any of these.
No. Nope.
Echo Knight.
Don't look at me.
Echo Knight. Anyone play this at all? Anyone? No?
The Sega Knights, I know.
It's like I'm asking people if
they
watched
Echo the
Tron
Dolphin and Knights Into Dreams together in one team up.
You win From Software.
It's like Battletoads and Double Dragons. It is the new ultimate team.
It is not that. It is a very strange first-person adventure game built with the King's Quest engine.
Kingsfield,
you're right. Damn it. The Kingsfield engine. I'm moderately sick today.
I would love to see the King's Quest engine turned into a first person.
That would be
replication. That would be interesting.
But in this game, I played a few hours of it last night. It's kind of horror, kind of adventure in that you're exploring this abandoned ship and meeting ghosts and solving their problems. But occasionally you'll run into
Pac-Man?
I think the ghost problem in Pac-Man is that they're being chased by something that wants to eat.
Technically, they're monsters, not ghosts.
Okay.
And he eats cookies.
So in this game, you're wandering around a ship. You're talking to ghosts. You're solving problems. But sometimes you go into some rooms and there are mean ghosts, and you have to turn on the light switch to get rid of them. Mm-hmm. So
it's basically, Luigi's Mansion.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, it's
so
either
you turn
that
on the lights, and there's the ghost of Lindsay Lohan.
It's either that, or like it's kind of close to like a prototype for Amnesia, but not nearly as scary. I thought it was kind of fun. It's only $6. It's a weird experimental, adventure game from Japan, and something that we never see today. So I think it's worth playing just because it's so weird and interesting.
Yeah.
And then we have Shadow Tower. And if you like Dark Souls and Bloodborne and Dark Souls 2, you probably won't like this, but you'll at least see where these games came from. Because this is a From Software first-person RPG, probably using the Kingsfield engine again. And it's very, very dark and very like kind of Demon Souls-y, kind of Bloodborne-y in its tone. It's extremely hard to play because it's like everything you do, it feels like you're just doing it underwater. Like you swing your sword, it's like...
Would you call it the Dark Souls of PlayStation 1 first-person adventures?
It's the Dark Souls of Dark Souls prototypes, I would say. Right. And now I'm fired. I can't write about games anymore. I'm sorry, people. I'm retiring today. But Echo Knight Shadow Tower, it's weird. It's like we're still getting these releases on PSN, but it's like here's some weird games you never played and probably won't play again. So take them, I guess. And still none of these work with PS4 because that's impossible for whatever reason.
Mark Cerny made the system too good.
I think at this point you could teach a dog to emulate a PlayStation. Just like roll over. Okay, now get that chip working.
That needs to be worked out. I don't understand it at all.
If you want a system that's capable of being used for playing Knack, you just have to make some sacrifices.
It is weird, like, when they announce these games and when they're a big deal. Well, I don't think Miss Adventures of Trombone is a big deal for everybody, but it's kind of a big deal for...
No, it's that the PS4 isn't really doing anything in Japan right now. And all these people are, like, doing a last... All the Japanese developers are doing a last-ditch effort to dump everything they can on the PSN without having to do the whatever conversion is required for PS4. I don't know what the problem is there, and that hurts that there's nothing retro available on PS4. Other than Shovel Knight.
It does...
Well, there's like a City Connection, right?
It's all the arcade.
There's those Connection. Hamster games, basically. Yeah. the absence of PSN games, PS1, mm-hmm. PS2 classics on PlayStation 4 means that you can have things like Square Enix re-releing Final Fantasy VII as a standalone PS game.
I see, like they did on Steam.
And then laughing at people for being upset about it.
Which is finally getting its retro due. And in the meantime, Steam, do they just get all the Metal Slug games?
I think they just released one of them recently.
Yeah.
I don't know which one. Was it 5 or X or something like that?
X came out, but I know like I was so excited when 3 came. I think that was like the first time SNK had released anything on Steam.
Yeah, those are basically the XBLA ports.
Are they?
Okay.
But it's still nice to see Japan not ignoring the PC. I would prefer to buy these games on Steam.
Well, SNK is great at releasing their old shit.
Yeah.
That's all they have, right?
But Square just started. Even Konami, as their death rattle, started releasing.
I mean, Square's been using PSN Steam for a while.
Conversions exclusive for Steam. Like that is totally new.
Oh, okay.
And I worked a little for the Japanese. It's like the Japanese don't use the PC as like a gaming machine. So
that's where I keep my porn games.
Yes, it's where you.
All my $300.
I swear to
edition.
God, it translated a USB masturbation hole. That's the thing I saw.
Who's localizing that?
In the store. It's so funny. I'm going to use it when I get my Oculus.
Can't download that.
So, like I was saying, it's so weird when you see like a big deal like Trombone, a big deal to people like us. It's like, dig out your old system and play this because it's not working on PS4. And I don't know. It just feels like such a missed opportunity. But Jeremy's probably right about like, oh, they can sell this to you for more later. So that's when you'll get it. And it's just very sad.
I don't think you'll see the same amount of retro releases on PS4.
Oh, yeah. There's no way. I mean,
I don't think they ever sold very well.
No. They couldn't possibly.
From Virtual Console to PSN stuff. I think they wanted too much.
And then when you look at like the top-selling things on there, it's like Crash Bandicoot 1, 2, and 3.
I think it also makes more sense for them to eventually integrate PlayStation Now streaming into that sort of thing. So
some kind of rental service for these games.
Yeah. So then they can keep selling them to you over and over again and not have to worry about you buying them and only buying them once.
Even more input lag.
I'm very retro-focused, obviously, and nostalgia-heavy. But then when I see, like, you want what for a PSP game? Who's nostalgia for the PSP at this point? I'm not paying $19 for Crisis Core.
Well, those aren't reissues. Those are the digital versions.
PSP game.
They
but
have
still,
a better price. Also, you can't buy Crisis Core on digital.
It's a joke. But it's the only,
damn it.
It's the only
no,
PSP
No, rub
game.
Salt in the wound.
Name
why don't
another
you?
PSP game you're nostalgic for.
Mega Man Powered Up.
That is impossible to get on there for whatever reason.
Yes, that's all somehow possible in Japan. Yeah.
I was there when it was tried, and like it couldn't pass certificate. I'll shut up about it.
No, I know. There's some. Apparently, there's like some weird thing in the localization that messed it up.
Hmm. Yeah, the localization messed up legends, I believe. The voice. I don't even know if I should be saying all this.
Listen, but, if you do want to spill any corporate secrets, just please speak directly into the microphone.
Well, yeah, there's no Mega Man Legends on PSN, right? No American version?
No.
Also, I don't think they're in Japan either.
They are.
I think it's an issue of the voice acting.
There's the PSP game, but...
Well, okay, maybe. I don't remember.
The PSP remakes, I think, is available. But I don't think the PS1 games are. And actually, what I've seen online lately has been that there's speculation that... the issue is not the voices, it's some like
actors.
I've
read that, yeah.
No, it's some textures they use that look like copyrighted trademarked products.
There was a lot of rules broken for the first 30 years of making games.
Yeah, I believe
now it's all coming back to bite our asses. Mm-hmm.
I believe, Jeremy, they had like a sponsorship deal with a Japanese like energy drink company, but they can't
also
actually.
An animation studio.
Okay, that too.
Or animation college.
And they can't go into the files and edit them because apparently that breaks the terms of service on a PSN.
Yeah,
that's what the rumor is.
Actually,
speculation
Sony
is.
has stood in the way of us getting. Yeah. Reissues of Mega Man Legends twice. They wouldn't let the PSP remake come over because it was too similar to the PS1 games, and we can't have those games out in America.
Here's a really bad version
that
of Parappa.
Was released,
you know,
right? And then now they won't let people make any changes whatsoever to the original PS1 reissues for PSN. As opposed to Nintendo, who will go in and modify textures or whatever is needed.
Yeah.
Like, okay, we can't call this a yo-yo, so we'll call it the Island Star. Okay, done.
But what would happen? Think of the consequences.
Right.
There are none.
So it's just corporate stupidity standing in the way of
so
viable
glad you got
releases.
To say it, not me, but please send all your death threats to Capcom Sony. And my friends there.
No, well, Chris, Retronauts has not endorsed death threats.
You were being glib. Yes, please send death threats to Capcom and anyone who's ever worked there, such as Chris.
In fact,
put on the
all of you. You made 18 months of my life miserable. I'm still...
Chris, it's okay. The healing needs to...
You were never able to say while you were working there, like, this is why you don't have that. And it sucks, but stop sending us death threats because everybody tried. And like it's hung up on an end that's – I don't know. I should stop talking.
No, it's – yeah. We understand the people.
It's okay. You have people like me who keep prodding and eventually we'll get the story from someone.
Yeah, that's fine. But the anger and then like the prank calls and like these like weird Reddit pre-docs things that happen on two regular basis over Mega Man games.
Yeah, I think
that
easy way to say it is the people who care, not the people making decisions.
Yeah.
So
direct all death threats to the cast of the Laser Time
podcast. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Now we opened a can of worms.
Oh, man.
Now we're going to move on to listener mail. And if you missed the prompt, I put it out on Twitter and Facebook. Hey, go to our blog, leave me some comments or questions, and then we will answer them in this episode. And
Don't do that now. It's too late.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is probably a month ago.
See
but,
you next year.
Those comments are closed.
This is the pre-taped Colin show.
I should be opening a P.O. box soon, so I'll get back to you with that. But until then... if you missed it, I'm sorry. If we didn't read your comment, I'm sorry, but we only have a short amount of time to fill here. And let's get started with Sergio. And he wants to know, hey, what are the chances of an episode about the history of Retronauts going from Parrish to Bob to the Trio's host and censored / controversial / regrettable / favorite moments in episodes? So for that, we need microphones that would go up our own butts because that's where we'd be crawling, right? If we did a show about ourselves, am I right?
Yeah. You could smell your own farts.
Let me tell you about the mystical year of 2006.
I think every once in a while you deserve something like that. Was it 2006? Is that when
that's when Jeremy started the show. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
It was because everyone else was doing podcasts and I said, why not? I want to talk about this Final Fantasy III remake.
And that's it.
That was it.
A legacy.
And the show wasn't supposed to be called Retronauts. Retronauts was a blog that I was running, and I was like, I can't think of anything better, so we'll just call it Retronauts for now. This is going to last three episodes.
Then they'll
kill us, and this won't last at all. And then it kept going, and I never thought of a better name.
Was that during the 1UP days where they launched like 18 podcasts?
Yes.
And that's the one that stood out. That's the one that I listened to, Retronauts. And
there were roughly 18 podcasts at once, weren't there?
They were the first ones to do it, period. Like, no one had a game podcast yet.
I think so. I mean, there's probably maybe a few that we just don't remember. But I know 1UP had it was like a huge initiative in like 2005 or whatever. Something like that.
It was – I mean, it really started with Jane Pinkard, who wanted to do just like a weekly one-to-one conversational podcast. So I remember sitting in her office – or not her office. It was like the extra office. And she repurposed it to have conversations, and nothing really ever happened with that. But then a bunch of people decided, oh, let's actually take this someplace. And Andrew Pfister helped set up equipment. And I think the first one to start was – it was basically Garnet Lee took over for Jane, and then that evolved from like the let's have coffee and talk about a video game thing to 1UP Yours. And then a bunch of the magazines were like, wait,
how come – changed to beer.
Yeah.
And then changed to whiskey.
Or beer in a whiskey. And then I think a bunch of the magazines were like, hey, those stupid 1UP people get a podcast. How come we don't? Actually, no, it probably wasn't like that. It probably was – it probably was something forced on them now that I think about it.
I was going to say that's how I remember the environment being. Yeah. We don't want to do anything new and different.
And that's when Ziff –
that is correct.
That's when Ziff Davis changed her name to Whoops All Podcasts temporarily.
Anyway, so I think Retronauts might have been the only one after 1UP Yours that was voluntary. No one forced me to go down and talk about old games. But I was like, I gotta get this out somewhere. The blog's not enough.
I think we're the last 1UP spiritual successor thing to – I mean, does Garnet Lee still do his show?
Garnet's working with Amazon Games in Seattle, and he can't be doing anything press related.
I see. Okay. I wasn't sure if he was still doing Weekend Confirmed or Garnet and John or whatever did one. As for me, the mystical, magical story of how I got to do Retronauts, Jeremy asked me and I said yes. And that's basically it. And the only reason Retronauts was able to continue is because no one was paying attention, which is the best work environment in some ways, I think.
Some ways.
Yep. It's like in one way, yes, you can do whatever you want. In another way, they go, oh, you're still here? Oh,
yeah, the problem with an environment where no one's paying any attention is that eventually they're going to notice and then it's all over and you're out looking for pennies on the
street.
But
in those magical 2 years, we did a lot of fun stuff, I think.
Yeah, I mean, for whatever reason, I was never happy with the way the show turned out and always kind of hated it.
Even now?
I'm okay with it now.
Okay with it.
I don't know. It's different. It's just a different environment. It didn't help that like everyone – not everyone, but a lot of people at Ziff Davis were always just really shitty about the podcast. I don't know why, but there was a lot of shade thrown at us, if you will.
Well, if I'm not
so
mistaken,
that didn't help either.
You guys didn't your podcast predate iTunes podcasts?
I don't know the question.
Yeah. Nobody gave a nickel fuck about podcasts, but until Apple included it in their new version of iTunes, podcasts were something you would make fun of.
Yep.
And then once there was money in it, people really stopped making fun of it. But we received that shit constantly for the stuff we did at Games Radar. It diminished constantly. Like, they hated podcasts. I've never listened to that.
Even now, everyone, like, corporate people hate podcasts. You can't monetize them very easily. So
this should not be
unless
a podcast.
You do a Patreon,
it should be a 100 segment article with around the web links for the like 3/4 of the page, I think.
I don't know. For whatever reason, the show just never
click this.
The show just never quite worked the way I wanted it to, and it's really a shame. It probably was better than I'm giving it credit for, and I was just being too hard on myself.
It was,
but you know, I wish we had that environment again where we could record podcasts pretty much anytime we wanted every week with this staff of like 40 super knowledgeable people with deep history and roots. I mean, that was
40. Wow.
That was maybe it wasn't 40. It was like 30. But I mean, that was such a rare once in a lifetime scenario. I wish we could go back to that. And I wish people would understand that once everyone at 1UP got laid off, it was really hard to do that because we didn't have all those people just there to say, hey, you're an expert in this game. Come talk to us about it.
Would you like to come talk about this for free?
Yeah, it became a real challenge to put the podcast together. So then I dumped it on Bob and let Bob stress out.
And I had a lot of fun with it in my time there. And
that's why Bob's lifespan is going to be half that of a normal human.
That's okay. So let's move on to our next question. We have Andrew who asks, what are your thoughts regarding the history of video game history? What are some of the great books about video game history? And do you feel that the current programs intending to preserve video games are doing enough to protect and present game history?
Okay.
That's from Andrew. Ray's got something to say.
What up, Ray?
Well, this is one of those things that is it's as best as it's ever been, yet needs so much more work to it.
That is true.
Fortunately, we're off on a great foot with books like Game Boy World 1989, The Given.
Yeah, see, it's great that we had this moment where where people like you and me, Jeremy, can go on these book services and design our stuff and write them the way we want and sell them to people the way we want without having to have a deal with anything. At the same time, it's like it's still hard to be taken seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel that's true too.
I've sold like 120 copies of my book. It's not exactly racking up the bestseller charts.
They call it DIY because they don't want to call it professional.
I call it vanity press. Yeah. I think that's the traditional term.
And so like the real books, I went to a publisher and got an advanced books, I haven't really matured that much either.
Except the ones for MIT Press. Those books are fantastic. They started with the console or the platform design series. Mm-hmm. Started with Ian Bogost's
Racing the Beam.
Recent one is Nathan Eltis's I Am Error. And those are not really like populist books because they're very technical, but there's so much good content in those books. I mean, I Am Error, I've been writing and reading about NES history and the platform for like 15 years. And I learned so much from that book.
I need to read that book.
He did so much research.
Hopefully that means I Am Error.
What's that?
I Am Error?
I Am Error.
It's a Zelda 2 reference, right?
Yeah. Yep. That it's a weird title for the book because to me it's like, kind of this sort of superficial level like, oh, lol, wacky Japanese video games, NES games are so crazy. I'm angry about video games. But it's not like that at all. It's really like a super deep platform study that talks about how the business and the technology and the software and the context of NES games all pooled together to shape the nature of the games. It's a great read.
I got to say, I'm so sick of every like zip zap zoop. How video games rescued the princess and killed the dragon and killed the aliens. And like very very like cursory history of video games. Like here's what things everyone knows about Nintendo.
When
like
pop culture grabbed for that Chaos Emerald.
But even the stuff that's in depth is still not quite there. It's like I don't want to read Johnny Hollywood's marketing executive fan fiction.
What Miyamoto said.
Come on, Ray, you can name names.
I'm not interested in the untold history of Compile's tax returns. My brain kind of likes the more drier play-by-play stuff, but I don't think my heart really does. And so it's like there's a balance there that's yet to be struck.
You're not a fan of I Am Error?
I haven't read it yet.
Oh,
I'm glad someone has.
I'm ordering that after this, by the way.
I really think you will like it, Ray. It's really, really good.
Yeah, I don't think that's what I'm talking about, really.
Okay. But, I know what you are talking about.
I just think, we need something a little more entertaining that is not, going to some sort of crazy extreme.
Personally, I would just like to see more oral histories. Like, just get all of the author out of there and just give me the subjects.
But Nintendo's going to have to fail first. Before anybody speaks on record.
No, you're right about that, Chris. Because I'm doing an episode about A Link to the Past today, and there is one interview online about that game with Miyamoto at the time. Like, only one for A Link to the Past, one of the best games ever. Just like, why can't they talk to him again about this? It's really frustrating.
He's given to the press so rarely.
Yeah.
It's like in 15-minute chunks, and it's about like the game that he's promoting. Mm-hmm.
I just want an Iwata asks for the history of Nintendo, and occasionally that does come up, but it's never enough. You hear these little tiny tidbits.
There's been some good ones, though.
Yeah, no, they're great.
It's a great backlog, but you don't get enough of those little nuggets, and that's basically what I want.
Unfortunately, the best sort of first or second person account of Nintendo we'll probably ever get was published in 1992. Yeah. Because so many of the original, the primary sources are dead now. Like Hiroshi Yamauchi is dead. Gunpei Yokoi is dead. Like we'll never be able to talk to those guys and pick their brains. And you know, Nintendo being a Japanese company, it's the most Japanese of Japanese companies, which means it's extremely insular.
And doesn't like to talk.
If you're lucky, you know, maybe you could get an interview with Masayuki Uemura, the designer of the NES, because he's retired. But even people who retire from Nintendo tend to stay very closed-lipped. Like I interviewed Hirokazu Tanaka, Hip Tanaka, and he's not with Nintendo anymore, but he's with like a partner company, and he didn't want to talk too much about Nintendo stuff. And we did talk a little bit about, you know, Earthbound and composing for that. But then I got an email that night that was like, by the way, Mr. Tanaka would appreciate it if you didn't actually publish any of that.
Yeah, that I hate that shit.
Chris, did you have something to say? I'm sorry.
Well, I just being reminded, my first couple, oh, I shouldn't say this, at Capcom was trying to do a documentary for the 30th anniversary. I'm their employee. They technically had Final Cut. Getting them to try and talk was impossible. Nobody wanted to talk about the history of old games or like where anything came from. I thought, like, is this like a weird Japanese humility, or is it Yakuza? Like, is there weird, something shady in the background that I'm not seeing? But like, no, it was so hard to get them to talk about previous accomplishments.
Yeah, it's a lot of things. It's just, you know, a more guarded private culture than ours.
Yeah,
I think that is changing with the younger generation of designers, but. You know, the folks who were making games back in the 80s, they were very much in that sort of old guard, you know, the wall of implacable silence that defined Japanese business culture back then.
If you don't like what your documentarian asks you, you can fire him. You will never have this situation again. It's like, still, no.
Yeah.
We won't say anything.
Well, about documentaries, it's like those have been rising up now more because it's that same sort of DIY stuff. You know, there's a lot of crowdfunding stuff.
Because unlike books, that's content, right?
Yeah, but some of them still get disappointing.
Oh, no, I don't.
Like, you guys heard of World 1-1? It just came out on Steam.
No,
I haven't seen
it. It's like
yet.
they spent all this time talking to the true creators and, like, you know, Bushnell and I believe Ralph Baer and a lot of the Atari guys. But then, like, you get your color commentary from IGN. Mm-hmm. Like, you spend half a day at IGN to get your commentary from the same four guys. When, by the way, within like a 30-mile radius of IGN's office, there's like at least a dozen people who would be more willing to provide something rich about it.
Right.
You know, and not just Sam talking about how they found quarters in the Pong machine. It's not Sam's fault. I like Sam. I actually, you know, I'm not saying I'd be great. I'd probably be just, you know, not even that.
I'll say I'd be great.
But, you know, it's like.
I'd be awesome.
You know.
I think you'd be great.
Not Chris Kohler, not Frank Cifaldi, not Peter Brown, who works at GameSpot, which is, by the way, three blocks away from IGN.
Yeah, they're the first people you think of when you think of game history.
Yeah, or us.
Yeah.
But what they will do is send me a form letter requesting to mention it in my magazine, which apparently they haven't read or get the point
of,
or realize that it ended. So it's like, you expect me to believe that your movie did the homework?
Yeah, that's a shame.
I did want to give a shout out to, in terms of game preservation, archive.org.
Yes.
Just uploaded an integrated in-browser DOS box, which I can never get to work.
Yeah, well, they've had that for a few years. Now they have not just DOS box, but MES as well. So they do Genesis games, a lot of other crazy consoles.
But the integrated DOS box to take all, like, the most unloved game, because I hate them. Old PC games are usually terrible.
And now
from
you
that
can
era.
See that.
Yeah. And yeah, but I have a very curious historian bug that I'll tell you guys later what I've
been. You go to the front page of that DOS box and you can see like Cool World. You guys should stream the Cool World DOS game.
It looks incredible, and I mean in the worst way possible, like a Mario Paint movie come to light.
It can't possibly be sexy though.
Depends on with no internet.
I guess anyone could make that sexy with enough imagination.
The question was like, what do you think about the current programs? And it's like, well, what programs? I can't name you a program, but I can name you some museums. I can name you archive.org.
Me too, yeah.
I can name you some torrent sites. But I can name my hard drive.
But overnight, like last year, like 14,000 games became playable overnight. And I've tried for a long time trying to capture these games, and it's really hard to do when a Windows 7 machine.
So I have to ask, like, what do you expect? It's like, I mean, why wait for anyone to do enough by your definition? Because we're probably not going to get an international society for game preservation anytime soon.
Yeah, I don't think within my lifetime.
I mean, because you know what? Technology already helped us get there before the need for that crap actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I write about this in the final issue of Scroll. It's like, you know, you can be your own video game historian right now.
Yeah.
Like, why do you need to wait for anybody to do it for you? You can use the internet to discover things. And it's like, I don't want you to worry about game preservation, really, because it's like there's a lot of the people already doing quite a lot already, whether it is a torrent or whatnot on archive.org.
Yeah.
It's like, don't wait for the British Museum to start exhibiting games just so you can finally go, see, Dad.
My life had value. One final thing I like.
It's right in front of you is what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. One final thing, though, on this. I really wish people would back away from the whole, you know, money equation when talking about preservation, because it feels like that is the first thing you see. Like, this game costs $30,000 for the NES. Check your garage, everybody. You might have it. Like,
It just feels collectors. Like
that's the only angle.
That's not a game historian.
Yeah.
And preservation. That's just BuzzFeed.
I know, but it seems like the price of something always comes up when something is found or something is like on display. Like, this costs $1,400 now. Just like, I don't care. I want to know about like who made it and like how it plays
exactly.
things like that. Just like the whole. Yeah.
He says after talking about how Tron Bond used to be $300.
That's true. But guess what? That was Chris Kohler's headline, by the way. Sorry, Chris. But that was it. It's a former $300 game now for sale on $6. So, I mean
– Sometimes you just got to
get the people what they want.
But Chris,
and what they want is not to spend money.
Chris is a historian and he is a collector, so I'll give him some, cut him some slack on
that. Love being talked about the third person. But
wait a minute. I'm confused now.
I'm here in the
You're
room.
A great talent, Chris.
But I forgot what I was going to say. Crap.
Probably wasn't important.
I've been going off on a couple of Amiibo rants, and like I've always thought games are for players, not collectors. I can't stand what the collector market has done to games, and I love that a release like Tron Bond hits people right in the eBay. Like, fuck you.
In a way.
Now it's getting played again. Aha, you can't get over it.
But it used to be just mine and 10,000 other people's.
The Xenoblades people, eat a dick.
But you still have people who desire the physical item and will still.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. Like you, if it's, you want to be your display, I have a lot less sympathy than the person who has
it. For sure. But I mean, it doesn't really affect the stupid.
Yeah, but these Amiibo, like my whole life I wanted something like Amiibos.
Yeah, me too.
And it's impossible. Like I'll never get started with that.
Well, now I'm 32, so I don't care as much.
You got your Diddy. What more do you want?
Yeah. I was supposed to use them, but I got disinterested in Smash Brothers. Didn't buy it for Wii U. But
can I say one last quick thing?
Yes.
They're not books, but there are two websites that I really want everybody to read, especially in relation to the
Please tell us.
Laser time.
No. The first one is The Digital Antiquarian, which is at philfree.net, F-I-L-F-R-E.net. And that's a guy who is really putting a lot of heart into writing these very good stories about different software houses and different trends and stuff that happen. Not very Japanese focused, I have to admit, but there is a lot of good stuff about like PC games and stuff.
Lots of Jazz Jackrabbit.
Second one is The Golden Age Arcade Historian. And that is allincolorforaquarter.blogspot.com.
I think I've been there. Yeah,
I've linked it a few times. And that guy, apparently he's writing a book, but he's just also putting in a lot of long form stories about things that happened in the Golden Age arcade stuff, because that was really formative in this country, at least.
I'll also recommend Before Mario, which is a cool blog. Doesn't get updated too much, but it's Nintendo's
blog.
That's been an invaluable resource for me doing Game Boy stuff.
I love like the Nintendo Bassmaster like fish finder thing. I want that for my 3DS.
You know me, I'm a huge cartoon nerd, so like this huge partnership with Popeye and Disney stuff.
Yeah.
Like I just lose my mind when I see those glorious pink cases. Ugh. That sounded really perverted, but it's just a color I don't see on a lot of packaging anymore.
So. Pink is back. We're going to be a little more efficient with answering these questions. There were some really good questions, and we have a lot to say. So let's dig into some more of them. So we have Kevin. He says, hey, folks, I really am enjoying the show's successful return. I hope it continues to do well. I'm interested in the pre-Crash game era and wondered if there was any interest or plans to do either full episodes or micro ones on dedicated consoles. Minor systems like the Astrocade and Vectrex, or even some of the companies from the time period like iMagic. I feel that decade or so has become a dark age that could always use some illumination. And that's from Kevin. And I think we've covered almost everything in that era. I'm like television.
We've covered the big platforms. We've covered Coleco, Atari, Odyssey. Intellivision. We haven't done Odyssey 2. We haven't done Fairchild Channel F.
But what is there to
say? We haven't done Vectrex. We haven't done Microvision. Okay. We haven't done...
I thought we covered a lot in that British games episode with Jazz, though.
Well, it's British, but what about stuff in the U.S.?
Can you call me when you do the FM Towns Marty episode?
That's my favorite console name.
Crash.
I just love saying...
chronology right,
I love saying the name.
And it's great.
This is like the only opportunity
Marty.
I have to say it.
FM Towns Marty! it's your kids, Marty! They don't exist because no one bought you.
We have a game system, but we'd like it to have an unapproachable name.
Yeah. Well, it didn't matter because I guess that was just a Japanese system, right?
Yeah, it was.
It's like these English words are cool.
Yeah, great answer.
But I think Jeremy said it, like, I guess maybe one day we'll do this. We kind of are falling back into more familiar topics just because we like to talk about the things we like. And some things like this take a lot more research.
Yeah, it's like...
I don't know.
What do you want from the show? You guys, you and Bob and Jeremy, right? It's like, can you really... Do you want to talk about all like, these pre-Crash things so much?
I'm okay. I mean, I've made an effort over the past year or two to dig into those pre-Crash systems. I mean, the Atari 26 episode, Atari 2600 episode of mine, I think I was the lead on Intellivision, ColecoVision.
No, like, I was on the television.
Oh, you were in television?
Yeah.
I can't remember. It's all a blur. So that was Ray.
Yeah, that was also a reader request.
Okay.
Really, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you have a personal relationship with these consoles?
I've pretty much talked about it.
I did
a micro episode on TI-99/4A, which is the one PC I really knew back then.
Yeah.
So I've kind of talked about what I can talk about from my own experience.
Yeah.
Anything else is going to be that sort of secondhand information, which we can do that, but it's not going to be as good. There's not going to be the passion behind it.
And I see questions like that as people sort of wanting a validation that we can't really provide because we didn't experience it like them so much. And then we get a lot of hate on the Atari Age forums for it, and it's like, God.
I'm sure.
Well, it's not our fault. All your games are terrible.
Well, I feel like
our phone, we're 45.
I don't speak for Retronauts, by the way, but yes.
I find that like when we have to do a lot of outside research, sometimes it can come off pretty dry, and then we get accused of just reading off things that we learn, which is basically what we kind of have to do because we are just learning this stuff secondhand. So I think when we do things that we have more of a relationship with, the episodes are more interesting.
Well, I'm always happy to tackle unfamiliar topics.
Oh, yeah,
if we
me
can
too.
Find an expert in the topic.
Yeah,
you know, like the UK PC episode we did a while back, a few episodes ago, getting Jazz on here for that was great. Like, he was extremely informative, and we were kind of just, you know, like tourists as he guided us around.
Yeah, but then sometimes you might get the opposite of that, where the guest is not so forthcoming and they're kind of nervous.
I apologize for the Tiny Toons episode.
No, you just suck about Atari.
That's so you know, it's tricky to tackle topics we don't know that well. But I'm always interested in and wanting to do that sort of thing. I mean, there's so much of video games that I personally never touched or never had an experience with because. You know, as a kid, I could only play so much. I had the budget to own some NES games, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I'm coming from. I don't think that's the only interesting part of video game history, and I am sympathetic to people who would like to hear me talk about other things, and I'm interested in doing that. But, you know, it requires a lot of work, and it's never going to come from a place of like, oh, childhood memories, because that just doesn't exist. It's too late. We're 35 years past that. Sorry, the ship has sailed.
Yeah.
I was born in 1980 in America. There's a lot of consoles I wasn't able to get a history with. Mm-hmm.
I'll say this. You know, I do love other people's nostalgia.
Yeah.
And, I talked about that, you know, on previous episodes where it's like, I don't have a personal affinity for the earliest game systems from the early 80s because I wasn't around then. And, you know, what I missed out on to me was more like, you know, the FM Towns Marty, for example.
Yeah, you know,
so, I do want to hear other people's experiences about it where I can't fill that in.
Yeah, I was talking earlier about how I was always kind of frustrated with the early episodes of Retronauts. And part of that, I think, was there was this tendency for everyone, including myself, to be really dismissive of anything that...
Pre-NES?
No, that we personally didn't have experience with. It was whatever. and, you know, kind of crapping on other people's nostalgia. And I've really, really tried to make an effort to move away from that and to...
Well, some of us had to grow up.
Yeah. All of us had to grow up. And, you know, I think we've ironed that out. I don't think that's part of the show anymore. And, you know, we'll make glib remarks occasionally. But I personally really try not to be dismissive of other people's passions and interests. Even if I don't happen to like a game, I try not to say, like, you are a bad person for liking this game, you stupid fool.
I disagree, so, Donkey Kong fans.
So anyway, I guess that's kind of a tangent. But
no, it makes
the
sense.
Answer is yes, we'll do our best.
Yeah. Please look forward to it.
I think then the answer is it's hard to get enthusiastic about something you're not naturally interested in. Yes, you guys are all – we've all been kind of trained to do research on the internet and whatnot, but – doesn't mean you'd be passionate about delivering that information.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure. Let's move on to Brian. He's got a hell of a question. I'm going to cut it in half. So he says – he's talking about the Saturn. He says the Saturn was fairly popular in Japan, so I wonder what could have been done to help replicate that success. Releasing the RAM card here might have helped, especially with the fighting games that took advantage of it, but maybe it would be seen as another 32X. Clearly there are parties to blame on either side of the Pacific, but it seems almost as if the Saturn was doomed to fail – even before the premature arrival of Saturn.
Yeah,
Saturn?
Releasing the RAM cart here would have been like repairing your faucet after your house is flooded.
Saturn was too poised to replicate the Japanese audience anyway. It was a good place to port arcade games that Sega was making and a sprite machine. And none of that was where the Western market was headed.
Yep.
I think like the contention between the American and Japanese branches of Sega meant they were in a situation where it could not have possibly worked just because of just how many revisions that system went through.
Yep.
The lack of communication, the lack of a Sonic game, which was an important thing. It probably wouldn't have saved the Saturn, but it would have helped.
I remember being frustrated as I chose Saturn in that battle and that there was no Sonic game.
You had Gex, you had Bug.
Sonic Jam.
I get more infuriated as the years go on. Yeah, why wasn't there a Sonic game? 3D Blast was terrible.
It's because Yuji Naka said no.
Yuji Naka apparently was going through a tantrum that period.
Yeah, it's like, you're making a Sonic game without me?
He was trying to break out and be an artist within the confines of a corporate Japanese structure.
Yeah. I will say Knights was worth it, but it wasn't the thing that the Saturn needed to win. It was a weird game that I would like, but I was in the minority
We streamed for Saturn's anniversary, like everything basically redone for XBLA, mm-hmm. which is beautiful. Like it's really great. But then I remember like as a kid, I'm playing Daytona USA. I was playing Daytona USA and I got the XBLA one. There are three tracks in that game. Mm-hmm. I got to see one of the tracks I'd never been able to see in my entire life because one of the biggest Saturn exclusives, there's no save ability and you have to be really, really excellent at a balls hard arcade game in order to access the second level that doesn't save.
In a bad port where you can't see enough far ahead of you.
And now imagine this is representing your next generation console. And you also have a Virtua Fighter game that needs to be remixed.
Oh yeah, it's like...
This is what you do. This is your bullet point, and it's bad at it. And I don't know. I love the Saturn. I love it. Has a lot of good moments.
Yeah.
I hear good things about that Virtua Fighter 2 port.
It's good.
For the time. Yeah, for the time.
It all looks beautiful.
It's really hard to go back to.
Assuming the XBLA one.
I mean the Saturn one.
But not the Guardian Heroes is great, and there's Dragon Force. And
the most expensive RPGs to date.
Yeah, still.
Again, sorry to bring up the price. I'm such a hypocrite.
Off
mic, I'll show you how well I emulated the Saturn recently.
Sure, I want to see that.
Feels really good.
Let's move on to our next question.
Preservation.
Preservation, that's how you do it. Terrence wants to know, this is a simple question, what are some of the better JRPGs to start off with for a newbie to the genre? Specifically, retro remakes or ports for handhelds like the Game Boy Advance, DS, PS Vita. Thanks a lot. That's from Terrence. I say Chrono Trigger.
Yeah.
Point. Period. The
no
end.
No matter what Jeremy says, Super Mario RPG.
Wow.
Legend of the Seven Stars.
Wow. I say they're both fine. They're both like of the same era, both by Square. I think they both have cool battle systems.
But I didn't really understand RPGs because they required, I'll be honest, probably too much reading when I was younger. But then like you put Mario characters in, I was able to wade into those battle systems and the structure of the games. And that's what worked for me. I don't know if you're also fit 14 in 1994, but if you are, that's how you should do it.
Jeremy and Ray, what do you think? A good starter JRPG that can be played on a handheld?
Are we talking about a current handheld?
He said PS Vita, Game Boy Advance, and
DS.
Game Boy Advance, then I would say Final Fantasy VI would be a really good starter because it's pretty easy. It has just enough little like bumps where you have to figure things out. A lot of flexibility, appealing characters. It's good.
Okay.
And 4, if you have a DS, the 4 remake.
No, the remake, the DS remake of 4 is really hard.
It's pretty hard, yeah.
It is not a beginner's game. It is a game that was designed for people who had played Final Fantasy 4 many times,
yeah, five other
knew
ports.
All the tricks, and then that game, it's like kind of like Mega Man 9 was for Mega Man fans. It's like everything you think you should do here or know you should do, it subverts and screws you for it.
But I totally get it.
Yeah,
Mega Man 9 is not very accommodating to new players.
No.
I was playing that game when I worked for a blog that had softcore galleries, and I named my blog post Fuck the Moon because I hated going to the moon in Final Fantasy 4, and I got yelled at for that. They're like, you can't put a swear word in your title. That'll mess up SEO. I'm like, there are naked ladies here. Why can't I swear? At the end.
What site was that?
That was Nerve. They stopped their video game blogging like 6 years ago.
I was like, I don't remember that
ago.
Being 61 FPS.
Yeah, 61 FPS,
which
was a good blog. I mean, yeah, I wasn't that offended by it, but it felt weird. Like, nudity and the F word, can't they coexist together in harmony?
Such a prude, Bob.
I know.
It stops being softcore when you put the F word in.
I guess so. Ray, did you have anything?
No, I can't really.
For handhelds?
Also on
there's
Vita.
So much.
Yeah.
You know, Vita opens up the world of PSN games.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Suikoden 1 and 2 is
very for sure.
accessible.
Which I've never touched, and I'm going to yell that a lot for Suikoden 2, which I should stop calling it. But that's what we called it in the deep dirty south.
Sure.
Suikoden.
I heard lots of strange pronunciations of Deus Ex when I worked at a GameStop. So, yeah.
Actually, I was just at a demo event, and someone from another country, like with his accent, referred to it as Deus Ex.
I see.
I was like, yes, I would like to Deus Ex.
It's great when you're at a Nintendo event and it's like, you guys ready for the new Pokemon game? Like, saying it completely the wrong way. So you work for the company.
Oh, look what? Really?
You can call it Pokemon, but you have to pluralize it.
Yeah,
Pokemon.
That's scandalous.
I forget how they said it, but it was really strange. It's like, that's not right. That's not right.
I was hassling Michael Raparez last night by not only correcting him on the pronunciation of Oregon Trail. Oregon Trail. I was like, yes.
Oregon Trail.
I know that because I've been like to Portland, slasher, Oregon. It was making him insane. He's a robot of syntax.
Isn't he from Oregon?
He is.
I thought so.
He's from Washington.
Washington.
Also irritating.
So Pierre wants to know, what is everyone's collection looking like? Do you get rid of older stuff? Do you spend more than you should? Or do you mostly resort to emulation? Who wants to start with this one?
I feel like we're always addressing this.
I only buy stuff in box that represents things that I like from my childhood. Everything I buy now is digital because I don't have the room for anything else. I haven't done that hard purge yet, which I really should.
Yeah.
I've done a few of those.
Do I have a collection? Yes. Am I a collector? No.
I have a ton of about 500 NES games in an attic somewhere in Florida.
Yeah. I mean, my collection sort of waxes and wanes because I got more increasingly fond of just keeping games that are good and or interesting to me. So when I sell something that's long in the tooth, it's like, okay, yeah, that's fine. Let's go get rid of that because it's probably super popular anyway. I have like 7 GameCube games now. I used it from 23 or something.
You're going to miss that copy of Bullet Witch.
But it's also like, going back to preservation, like GameCube games are really well emulated, so I can just rip those.
It's really hard still.
Yeah.
Right?
You'll get the right computer. You'll be fine.
You can do it easily. As for me, I am a writer for a living. So for me, employment is very ephemeral. So I don't like to buy things. And when I do, I want them to be digital because I don't want to have to move them. So I just mainly have things that are meaningful to me. Like I have a copy of Maniac Mansion that was signed by Ron Gilbert. Just a few things like that maybe. But I don't go whole hog into collecting just because, again, I used to collect stuff in the past and I would have to keep selling it because of me not being employable. So I don't want to do that again.
Yeah.
And that's my reason. Jeremy, how do you do it?
I mean, I did collect games when I was younger and single and then, got into a relationship where I ended up becoming the sort of sole breadwinner a lot of the time because of my wife's health issues. So that really disabused me of the desire to own a lot of stuff because that's money that could be used in better ways. So at this point, I hang on to games I really like. I have a ton of DS games that are just, things that I accumulated during the DS's life.
Yeah, I'm probably going to start offloading some of those.
I don't know where to cut. I would have to drop below like 125 games and I don't know where to cut.
Wow.
I really like the DS. What can I say?
Yeah, it's a good system.
In terms of collecting though, I really don't. I do have a lot of older games now, but it's always for projects. Like if I am acquiring stuff secondhand, it's really because I want to do something with it. Like I have a lot of in-box Game Boy games now, but that's specifically for Game Boy World so that I can not only capture video from the original cartridges on original hardware, but also so I can photograph the boxes and the packaging and, you know, like make that resource available for people. That's the whole point of Game Boy World is to get these scans and photos of packaging up on the site with video footage and, you know just you, like raw capture footage to make it like really
Capcom
comprehensive.
Manuals. I have a big stack of them that I took for some reason.
Go for it. I could use
Capcom
them all.
Capcom Star Wars. Like I'm like, why does this exist?
I'll take whatever you got.
All right.
I did the same thing. It's like I bought an MSX but only to photograph it. So it's like the auction said it was junk but it worked. But so so now I have an MSX collection of one game, which is Goonies. But
yeah I mean having gone through all of 1989 and basically like I have scraped those games clean, not only captured tons of footage, but like scanned every manual page. I have no more use for most of those games.
I bought
so
all those art
games. I don't
plan
to keep them around.
I bought all the art team games just to scan the boxes. Got rid of those eventually. Got rid of, sorry. Don't mean to be disrespectful.
At this point, I don't really collect. I'm more interested in archiving and making this content available for people to use. I don't know if anyone really needs an interior manual scan for Pachinko Time.
Don't
for
think
Game
about
Boy,
it too hard.
But if you need to know what is on page 9 of the Pachinko Time manual, that information is out there for you, and you're welcome.
Pachinko Time is coming soon to Laser Time Network as well.
I can't wait.
I just hope that question doesn't come from a place that's like conflating us with being collectors just because this is a retro show.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I know people can do that.
I don't have the collector blood in me anymore.
Even every so often, I'll get like tweet mentions that mention me and Chris Kohler and Frank Cifaldi, and they're like, no, I don't know what's going on with the NES market.
Those guys are different people than me. I mean, I am acquiring a lot of older games now, but it really has more to do with the desire to do something creative with them or something informative.
Yeah.
And also because I did discover, you know, I finally got into the world of, you know, RGB modded hardware and upscalers and that sort of thing. And I've never really liked emulation. Like it just never feels right. And this is a way to play those old games that feels right. Yeah. So those NES cartridges I didn't really care about all of a sudden have become appealing to me because, hey, I can play Mega Man and it'll finally feel right again.
Yeah, those other guys have like storage units full of stuff. My Famicom is in a box in a closet along with a foot tall stack of EGMs. That's pretty much.
I had to leave my collection in a across the country. Like it can't be out here. I don't know.
I still have stuff in my mom's house for sure.
I think it was, and I don't want to bring this up to bring back any scarring memories, but wasn't it Mark McDonald who basically had an entire storage unit of stuff just like given away because his credit card information changed and he didn't update it? Yeah. I'm not placing the blame on him. There should have been some safeguards in place.
No, that one's heartbreaking.
Yeah, that's what like disappeared. Abused me of ever wanting to be a collector again. I was like, that could happen. I don't want that to happen to me.
It's a good episode of Storage Wars, though.
Yeah,
and now I don't have I don't collect anything, and I just kind of like. I used to envision like, what if someone breaks into my house and steals stuff? I got to get a gun. I'm like, there's nothing of value in this entire place.
If you're from Florida, you said?
Eight-year-old Toshiba television and a sealed copy of Tiny Toon Adventures for the Famicom. Yeah. That's all.
That's what
you
criminals
got.
Are looking for, actually.
Yes. Crooks, nothing for you here.
They're going to put in their dollar sign bags.
Get about an ounce.
You are all pretty clearly not fans of sports games. Okay, thanks a lot, Badger Noonan. What are you trying to say about me? Am I a nerd? Of course I am. So what are your favorite sports games? I'm going to say mine is Rap Jam Volume 1.
Oh,
still waiting
on.
For Volume 2. No, I'm just kidding.
RBI Baseball, baby. RBI Baseball.
I like the...
Still holding the vigil for Rap Jam.
Hey, it could happen. I like Inazuma 11, the one they brought out.
Oh, really?
It's a fun, like, little RPG. It's not super great, but I like how it translates soccer into, like... turn-based RPG. Related
to that, I really wish they'd have brought out a Calcio bit in English for North America at least.
What is that?
It's like Nintendo's soccer sim, but it has a very pixelated little tiny retro people aesthetic to it, but it is very fun and light and meant to be about managing a soccer team along with playing the games with it.
Mario Golf is my favorite Mario spinoff.
Oh, if that counts, then yeah. Mario Golf, GBA, and Game Boy. I don't like how they dial back on the RPG stuff.
Exactly.
Me, though, but,
So I was going to say NBA Jam,
yes.
The Kunio sports games, Tecmo Bowl is pretty good, the original ones, even up to like the Super NES ones, and Mario Golf on Game Boy Color for sure.
Mm. Do you have one, Jeremy? Any sports games? Baseball for Game Boy?
He's thinking.
Klonoa Beach Volleyball.
That's there we go.
I can't believe that jiggle technology they got on that thing.
It does. Different series. Wobbling ears. I don't really like sports is the problem. So the idea of playing a video game of that, that's not working for me. Although I will admit that I do – there is something I like about golf games.
They are very, I don't know.
They're kind of hypnotic and they're almost – maybe it's that it seems to be the most like focused around individual skill as opposed to dealing with the mess of a team. Like any kind of team-based sports game is not fun to me because it's mostly the computer playing and me really screwing things up for the computer.
It's you against the wind.
I played – I had to do a PES 2016 demo recently.
Oh, no.
And it was really – it was bad. It was brutal. And eventually I put the controller down and just let the computer play. And the computer really held its own against itself. Did a lot better than I did.
You need to get up and use the bathroom, make dinner.
But you know, a golf game, like I played Game Boy Golf a few months ago for Game Boy World, and I was like, wow, this is really good. This is way better than all the other sports games on the system.
I enjoy stopping meters too.
So. Yeah, right.
Stopping meters for the win.
It's kind of like sniping, but with a club.
Excuse me.
Playing video golf is better than going out to play and just being another white guy on the course.
Oh, yeah. No, never play golf in real life. No. We should say that.
My in-laws are trying to get me to play golf. They retired and started playing. And they're like, it's the best thing we've ever – they love golf. They're like, we're thinking about moving near you. And when we do, you're going to come to Pinehurst with us and play golf. I think the world's greatest golf course would be wasted on me. I don't know, guys.
Yeah. I think you get just as much enjoyment going for a nice hike and flipping a coin every once in a while. Oops, I dropped it. Guess I'm off par.
I've got some ugly pants somewhere.
Drink. Yes. Make sure to remember the ugly pants.
It's an important part of the golf.
Mario Golf, Toadstool Tour, and GBC. Mm-hmm. Those are the best sports games of all time.
I'll agree. So Ron wants to know, I enjoy how you guys rip on the plenty of old awful video game cartoons, but would you care to voice your opinion on any you feel were and maybe are still somewhat tolerable? The Mega Man cartoon perhaps? Flat out, I will say no.
No.
Not good.
However,
Super Fighting.
Some of them had good action figures.
They did.
Which Mega Man ones?
Hold on. I did like the Mega Man figures, but only because it was really the only way to get a Mega Man toy.
It was. I mean, going to the store and seeing a Cutman action figure, I was like,
crazy.
But, you know, it was like 6 or 7 years after the Mega Man, the original Mega Man came out.
That's true.
So it was like, here's this character from a game from a long time ago. Wow, that's great.
I was still the age where I could still squeeze out some actual fun out of playing with action figures, so I enjoyed it quite a bit. But it's like, yeah, that's the key thing. The shows themselves, not so good.
I'm trying to think.
I can't think of a single one, man. I really can't.
If it's out there, it's probably like some anime that made something good out of something.
What was the acclaimed Smash Brothers show?
The Power Tower.
Power Squad. That's the one. I say that because you can't find it.
It's got Quirk in it.
The acclaimed. Was it Quark and Bigfoot?
Quark and Bigfoot.
Two guys from Arch Rivals. Right. Oh, man, what a classic team.
Yeah. And there was like one guy from NARC, I think, was in there.
And Kuros.
Terrible.
God, I'm trying to think.
There's nothing good.
Maybe, I don't think there are.
Well, I mean, people seem to have a lot of affection for Pokemans.
Sure. I'll give you that.
So maybe that's as good as you're going to get.
People somehow like that Kirby cartoon. Maybe I'm just too old.
I say go to that Wikipedia right now with a list of Kirby episodes, Kirby Back At You or whatever it's called, and then read every episode title like Troy McClure. It's the most fun you will have all day long.
Is it like
– it may ever be from Happy Snack Attack.
they do the two-phrase structure.
I was going to say, do they? Do they do that?
They're tons of episodes are titled like or
– Day-to-Day's Counterattack, Kirby Fights Back.
Yes, Karate Ninja Baby Seals.
Okay, we'll do that when the show is over.
Yeah. I will say that I thought the Street Fighter movie was pretty good. You know, the first anime.
Oh, yeah.
Although,
you know, in 1990, I want to say six. I rented the VHS of that and ended up getting the uncensored version, not realizing it, and got to the part where all of a sudden Chun-Li's in the shower, and I'm like, I can't decide if this is the best or worst thing.
Conflicting emotions.
It was very conflicting.
So
I decided best.
We have Hal9K who's asking us, what is the number one retro game on your backlog, a classic that you never gotten around to or tried back in the day but never completed? And that is from Hal9K. Anyone have anything for this one? I've got a few.
Planescape Torment.
Ooh, that's actually one of mine too.
I need to play that. I really do, and I really want to.
I heard
but
that
my God, it's like 100 hours. Yeah, I wasn't really a valid participant in that one.
I barely
mine
was.
Mine is super lame. Up until Twilight Princess, I'd finished every Zelda on consoles, and except Majora's Mask. Bought a new 3DS, got the new Zelda Majora's Mask remake. Got completely sucked into it, and the same day I also had a copy of Monster Hunter. And guess which one won, Bobby?
I see.
Monster Hunter won, and I've never finished Majora. It's been on my backlog for 20 years now.
Now you can play the 3DS one.
Which I like. I did. I played it for about 5 hours, and I liked it quite
a bit.
Oh,
nice. That's good to hear.
It is impossible if you're not reading a guide. I don't have the patience for that.
They made it. There are hints everywhere now.
Yeah.
So that can help you. Ray, what do you got?
Yeah, I don't know. I think I focused too much on the number one part. But I was struggling. I guess Zoda's Revenge.
Whoa,
yeah. I've not played past like chapter one of that game.
Finished it. On one shot, I fell in love with Star Tropics for like a week and then and then immediately jumped into Zoda.
Yeah. Was this last week?
No. Okay. This is in the very – like when I first got a car – like someone asked, when did you start being a games enthusiast? The second I got a car and a job, like all I would do was just dump things on old games – dump money on old games.
I'm going to say if you go back to our fan translation episode, most of those games on list.
Yes.
I really want to play like Wonder Project J, Wonder Project J 2. I want to play Portopia.
Oh, I need to play Seiken Densetsu 3. That's a big gap.
I did that one.
I need to play Sucky Den.
You can drive a truck through that gap.
Yeah. I did play Sucky Den. 1 and 2. I'm trying to think of anything else. Basically, any like 16 or 32-bit RPG that gets fan translated, and there's been a bunch of them lately. I see them, and I'm like, I don't have 40 hours. I can't do this.
Earthbound.
Like, really Earthbound?
I got to do Earthbound.
Oh, you should do. You'd like it, Chris.
I know.
It's great.
I tweeted a picture when it came to Virtual Console, and you said the exact same thing. Like, keep playing, keep going. You'll like it.
And now look where we are.
Yeah. Okay, so we have one from Ian, and it actually goes out to Ray. He wants to know, like, what made the Xbox fail in Japan? What are the chances of a non-Japanese console ever getting a foothold? And that's from Ian. Ray, do you have anything for this? You wrote that Xbox Japanese games issue of Scroll. Which one was that?
Four.
Now it's still on sale, right?
Yes, of course. Indefinitely.
Yeah,
but he said he read the book. So I'm like, read the book? I don't know what to say.
He wants a follow-up.
I mean...
ever since the Xbox was introduced, console sales have been declining in Japan.
That's part of it for sure.
The Xbox failed because of a massive deficit in both marketing strength and cultural notoriety. Mm. Because when you bring out a giant black brick from America, they're not going to take that well to it. And when it also only has a bunch of first-person shooters, of course you're only going to appeal to the Western game otaku who give a crap about it, or expats.
But they got Blue Dragon and Lost Odyssey, right?
They don't care about Madden and Osaka.
Well, first of all, I mean, I was talking about the Xbox One, the original Xbox.
Oh, you're right. Okay,
that's a confusing one.
Yeah.
Jeez. that no wonder I'm lost. There's like two Xbox Ones. Okay.
Yeah. So that's what I wrote about was the original Xbox. And the Xbox 360 did have better support but apparently sold much worse. So
It's that funny Chris mentioned Madden. I think Madden just gets released unlocalized in Japan for like the five people who want to.
The last 2 years of the original Xbox, that I believe Madden was the only game released during its lifespan.
Wow.
For 2 years. There's one game released a year and it was
for like the one place.
For like 07. Like
yeah.
07.
So again, I mean, if you read the magazine, there's a bit about the World Collection, which was Microsoft doing exactly what you just said, Bob, which was releasing games unlocalized from America. So it would be like Outlaw Golf coming to Japan.
Outlaw Golf.
Simpsons Road Rage.
It would be like Dave Attell, Tokyo.
Yeah.
Who doesn't? He's a delight.
I'd watch that.
So Explicit Baron wants to know, there has been no competition in the home console market since 2001 when Sega withdrew from the market. Do you think there will ever be a new substantial competitor to the big three? And that's from Explicit Baron. Who wants to field this one? I've got an answer, but it could be too glib and snarky.
No, console games are dying.
I think some console people don't want to be doing this anymore, to be honest. That's just the sense I get from some like companies. They're just like, oh, I guess we have to keep doing this. We should have ever have announced something new.
And the ones who think there might be something in it are releasing these smart boxes. So have this pile of rectangular things that have
I don't want to pick on Microsoft, but I mean the writing's on the wall for how much they care about the video game portion of their company. I'm sure it sounded like a great idea in 2001, but now we're stuck with this.
I would actually say on Microsoft's defense, like, there is no justification for a console anymore just because it's what we're comfortable with. It's glorified copyright
protection. Yeah, I mean I totally agree with you. The least profitable thing to do today seems to be to make a AAA game. Mm-hmm. Like, there are so many other ways to make money that are better.
On a closed box.
Yeah, exactly. Jeremy, do you have anything to say about this? Like, how do you feel?
I don't know. I feel like a newcomer getting into the console market right now is kind of like a new publishing label getting into the 8-track market in about 1980. Yeah.
It's like,
hey, some people still buy those. It's but boutique. That's not really where it's going.
It's like
maybe. I don't know much about the economy, but my perception of it has changed so much.
Say a lot about it.
but imagine, like, would somebody start a car company tomorrow?
Yeah.
Well, doesn't that sound like idiocy?
You mean Elon Musk?
That's a better example.
Those cars are going to drive us
around. Do you consider him an idiot? Some people do.
No, but I mean, like, it seems like a foolish investment. So I'm going to start a TV company tomorrow. You're an idiot. No one would advise you to go up against these, like, longstanding businesses. I don't know if any new businesses will ever start, to be totally honest.
Yeah.
Again, poor perception of the economy. But
I feel like Jeremy had an analogy. Mine is like, it's like you go to a party like at 3 a.m, the cops have broken it up, you show up with pizza and be like, hey guys, who wants some pizza? It's like everyone has already gone home. That's what it feels like to me.
In regards to the question, I think someone just wants Sega to come back.
I think so. I mean, we all want to in our hearts.
They're gonna break out of that mobile market they've put themselves into.
As disgusted as I am of being the new baby boomer generation, you go walk into an Urban Outfitters and look at their vinyl section and then realize they're the biggest physical vinyl retailer in the world, or in the country at least. And they also sell games and retro systems. Maybe there's a market for that. Like, maybe we're kitsch. Maybe the games I love are now the Flintstones for my generation.
Yeah, you can buy Retron 5 at like Barnes & Noble.
Yeah. So
that's funny.
It'll still be out there. I'm not worried about retro games.
You can't buy games for it, but you can buy the system.
You can hardly buy books at Barnes & Noble anymore. I went to the store once, and it's like, oh, it's all toys and board games and stuffed animals. It's like the books are in the back.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Who reads books anymore? Mm-hmm. God, get out of here.
I do, but on an iPad.
Me too. So Victor wants to know, and I find this is – we have a few minutes left, so we're going to wrap up these questions real quick. But he wants to know, should YouTube critics – and he has critics in quotes – in the vein of JonTron, Angry Video Game Nerd, and the Nostalgia Critic, be considered critics or just entertainers?
Entertainers.
Racist entertainers. I find they could be a mix of both, but it's very easy to fall behind the I'm just an entertainer if someone criticizes you, and even people like Jon Stewart have done that. Yeah. So I feel like it
– I do it all the time.
But here's Chris has done it.
Jon Stewart is also not a huge sellout on a daily basis.
Oh, man. Ray, please
you can't – I mean, Jesus Christ. If we're going to talk about – critics and ethics and all that shit. Like, yeah, you have to be an entertainer if you're going to accept money for promotions.
Pretty much, yeah. And I mean, it is a very lucrative business. If you get popular, publishers will come to you with money, lots of it, and they will ask you to play their games. That's why there have been six Five Nights at Freddy's, right, Chris?
Oh, man. Sony needs to go to PewDiePie and say, can you please scream about Echo Knight?
Echo Knight.
That game would sell better on PSN than it did in a
just drive up
life.
The Swedish Brinks truck.
Jesus Christ, I know. I know, man.
Yeah, I think there are definitely some talented critics on YouTube, and they are critics, and that's great. But yeah, there are a lot of people who are perfectly happy to be just entertainers, and that's fine too.
The example's in the question for sure.
Yeah,
I like pointing out. I don't want to sound like an old man. If you go to E3, you're going to have a hard time if you don't think YouTubers are professional people.
Yeah,
that's all E3 is now.
Well, it depends on the games, especially like sports games, Call of Duty. I mean,
I don't
publishers give priority to the YouTubers over us because We're jackasses who may or may not like their games.
I want to write about this once.
YouTubers love their games. Yes. Unless, you know, they make a change to, like, the way guns reload.
Oh, then it's,
in which case...
open season on their families.
I've got a 20-minute rant, part one of eight.
You shipped another broken game?
So let's do one more question, then we'll wrap up. And I think it's a good one. Sean Mark asks, do you think people will be collecting games from current generations of consoles in 10 years' time? Many games on disc barely work without patches, which may be impossible to get once online services retire. Publishers phased out instruction booklets. Will game collecting become box art collecting and not much more? Yes. And yeah, I mean, I think this is probably the last generation of boxed games.
People are already collecting this generation of games. Yeah. The 3DS physical releases of Ocarina of Time, Cave Story 3D. Mm-hmm. Like, I recently sold off my boxed copies of those because they were worth twice as much as I paid.
That could be the future. Just everything is digital but the collector's editions, and they will be like the physical things because people will pay way, way past the profit margin to get their hands on those.
Yeah. You know? Well, people will collect anything.
Yeah, for sure.
Including their own urine. And I don't know if that makes
gamers are especially prone to that.
They are. The urine, too.
That's the only thing they have in common with Howard Hughes.
Yeah.
The urine edition.
I had to stop. I'd rather collect experiences than crap at this point. I mean, this is from someone with more than one toy representing Jim Henson's dinosaurs in my house that I have to step over every day. I had to go to 7-Eleven today because my wallet has Spider-Man on it and it fell down in my messy room and is now camouflaged. Oh, I cannot see what I cannot find.
Look
my wallet.
Under Baby Sinclair.
This is what
Chris.
A life of collecting will do for you. No, I have Charlene, the Burger King toy. When you press the button, she puts a phone to her head. It's amazing.
What a classic character Charlene was.
Don't be like me is what I'm saying. Yes, I have two copies of Bubsy in the shrink wrap. It was funny at the time, and now it's a giant mess.
So that's the lesson for today's episode. Don't be like Chris Antista.
Don't be like me, Chris.
I like Chris, but if he wants to put that message out there, I'll broadcast a signal.
Don't be like me.
This episode brought to you by Chris. Cautionary warning.
I shouldn't.
Cautionary example.
I say kids,
Antista.
But like I know most of the people, they sound like they're about my age from all this. So I take that back.
Yeah. We're all children at heart, though.
Yeah.
So
I'd say, don't collect, but I've talked a lot about this because I'm like, oh, yeah, but digital games. Digital games, if this thing goes down, it's gone forever. I'm like, dude, that shit's data. It's never going away. I mean, I'm sure people thought when this game company went down, that game's gone forever. Nothing is gone forever as long as there's a fan base.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Whether you can get it legally or not, that's another question. Yo, but it'll always be around.
Yeah,
right?
It'll always be around because, like, you can't get – I don't think you legally can't play NES games on an NES. Like your user license has run out. So don't
illegal.
Worry about legality. Things you like will be preserved as long as the fandom is alive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we will do a job that the people who want to make money will not be doing.
Yeah.
People more industrious than me, though. So let's wrap up. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, SoundCloud, and Twitch.tv as Retronauts. And we're also on YouTube. So check out our stuff there. I should be streaming more in the future. So hopefully you guys will enjoy that. And also go to our blog for all kinds of great extra stuff. And that's where we posted this prompt for your questions. So if you missed that, make sure you check out our blog. And also US Gamer, because Jeremy and I work there and we want to stay working there. And we like the site a lot. At least I do. I don't know about Jeremy.
It's like the only site I deliberately – I don't mean to slam every other video.
No, please do.
But like type in the URL and not just follow a Facebook link.
At least out of the ones that actually cover only games.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the last. So also, we have t-shirts available on Fangamer. Please get some of those. They're really attractive, and I think they would look good on anybody because they're a glorious, what is it, orange color? Mm. Is it like bright orange? Yeah.
Fat kids, skinny kids.
It's rust orange. Next year, we're doing avocado and harvest gold.
Yes.
And baby diarrhea, yellow.
Yuck. Like Ray said? Oh, sorry. Like Ray said, they're for fat kids, skinny kids, but we do not endorse climbing on rocks. So please don't do that. Also, please keep the reviews coming. They've been helping the show a lot. And give us 5 stars. Tell us what you think. And it helps
reviews.
Us. Our ranking.
What context?
Oh, iTunes reviews. Sorry. Oh. Yes. Go into the iTunes Music Store and just tell us what you think. Make sure it's good because we want to rise to the ranks and defeat whoever's number above us. I don't know who that is, but the rankings are weird.
It's always Giant Bomb and Rooster Teeth.
That's true.
Don't worry about it.
What about that Minecraft Minute thing?
I don't know. Oh, yes.
Yeah. So, okay, we're also on Patreon, patreon.com/retronauts. That's how the show is funded. That's how Jeremy flies out here. That's how we pay for and replace our equipment all the time. So please, if you can give a buck a month, that's not asking a lot, and you'll be able to support the show. We can stay in business, as it were. We're not really making a profit, so it's not really a business. But we want to keep making these things.
Oh, it's like things. A startup.
Yeah, I guess so.
We're tech. We need to get some venture capital.
We make money in year 20, Jeremy, and that's when the cars and the women and the penthouses come in, I think. Yeah.
We're almost halfway there.
Yes. Yes.
Long tail. I like him.
So contact info. I am Bob Servo on Twitter, and please read my stuff at US Gamer and Something Awful. Ray.
I am RDBAAA on Twitter, and since we danced around a lot this episode, I also do Video Game History Magazine, or did, called Scroll, scroll.vg.
I recommend the Jellico issue.
Yes, yes you usually do.
You needed more City Connection information. Yeah, always.
And like I said, it will be sold indefinitely, even though I don't make it anymore.
Cool. How about you, Chris? Where do you come from?
Cantis on Twitter, but I do something every day over there at Laser Time. The Laser Time Network, that's on YouTube, but lasertimepodcast.com. We stream every Tuesday at 3 o'clock Pacific time, usually something retro, unless Dave can talk me out of it with something new. It does happen occasionally, but we do a podcast every week, and we're on Spotify now. And we should have a Patreon by the time you hear that, patreon.com/lasertime. But yeah, what are some previous episodes I liked of Lasertime? I'm going to try and write. We're a pop culture show. We've celebrated David Letterman leaving. We have celebrated gross toys of the 80s and 90s, slime, snot, puke-based toys. And bad Beatles covers. That was probably one of my favorite episodes of the year.
I enjoyed the top 10 best and worst animated features.
Yes, and we did one with superhero films too, so people can stop whining about Man of Steel and Spider-Man 3. No, these are the worst superhero films. No one ever mentions Elektra anymore.
Catwoman sucks. Jeremy.
I'm GameSpite on Twitter. You can find me at, of course, usgamer.net. And then there's my stupid little boutique project, GameBoyWorld.com, and some other stuff.
So that's it from all of us. We'll see you next week with a brand new episode of Retronauts Micro. Take it easy, everyone. Put a sound clip in.
I know what clip it is, too.
Oh, yeah. You know exactly what clip this is. Man, let me turn myself down here. Talk to the audience. This is always death.